This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of September 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 2nd of September. Reading for you today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: four charged over abuse of giraffe, ambulance service now rated inadequate in report, and crisis in NHS dental care across the county. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was the giraffe story. Four people are due in court after a protected animal was abused during a break-in at Marwell Zoo. Three men and one woman have been charged in connection with the incident, which took place between February the 15th and February the 16th last year. Nathan Daniels, 21, of Alexander Grove, Fareham, Bradley Green, 23, of Saltons Estate, Fareham, and Jason Huggett, 23, of Brockhurst Road, Gosport, have each been charged with burglary with intent to commit criminal damage. They have also been charged with causing unnecessary suffering to a protected animal. Coral Locke, 23, of Southway, Gosport, has been charged with assisting an offender. All four have been served a postal requisition to appear at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on September the 15th. Videos which emerged on social media appeared to show people creeping around the zoo at night time and captured them abusing the animals. In one video, a bottle is thrown at a giraffe, striking the animal in the face. In other footage, the group encouraged a tiger close to the fence before kicking out at the animal, causing it to bolt in fear. Police Armed Response, ARV, officers, a dog unit and a helicopter were all scrambled to the site and four people were arrested. It was unclear why it has taken 18 months for the four to be charged.
Ambulance service now rated inadequate in report. The ambulance service that serves Hampshire has been rated inadequate by health watchdogs. The South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, SCAS, received its rating from the CQC following an inspection in April and May, dropping from a good rating. The inspection was prompted by concerns received about the quality of the trust governance and its staff training. Just two of the six categories are service safe and are services well led, rated inadequate. And the publication comes days after it was revealed that a 94-year-old Ringwood man waited 6 hours for an ambulance. The elderly man fell over in Southampton Road in Ringwood shortly before 5:15 on August the 16th. The service was first called at around 5:20 p.m. and an ambulance arrived at around 11:20 p.m. 6 hours after the man first fell. Speaking on the CQC's report, Will Hancock, Chief Executive of SCAS, said the CQC has highlighted some serious concerns which we must and will fix as a matter of urgency. I want to reassure everyone that we have already taken swift action, but I recognise that we have more to do. Providing the best possible care to all our patients remains our top priority. The CQC assessed the Trust leadership, its Emergency Operations Centre, EOC, and the urgent and emergency care it provides to people. And a warning notice has been issued to the Trust, which is required to put immediate and significant improvements in place. The watchdog found issues with the Trust governance, which undermines the quality of care it provided. According to the report, medicines were not always managed safely or effectively, and delays in reaching people who had requested emergency assistance were frequent and prolonged. This resulted in poor outcomes for some people. Dina Westwood, director of CQC's South Network, said, "We initially carried out the inspection of SCAS in response to concerns about the quality of the trust's governance and training. However, as the inspection progressed, we identified further issues, particularly around the shared learning from serious incidents and allegations against staff not being appropriately addressed. We also found safeguarding wasn't being given priority it deserved." Mr. Hancock added, "We have an extensive improvement plan and we are committed to making things better. We will be keep focused on putting things right until we and the CQC are confident all concerns have been fixed. It is vital that every member of our team can raise concerns with the confidence that they will be dealt with quickly and effectively. We are also working with our partners across the NHS to manage the ongoing pressures so we can improve response times and hospital handover times." Lib Dem candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Danny Chambers, said, "For too long, this Conservative government has ignored the crisis facing our ambulance service, and now we are feeling it here in Hampshire firsthand. There are too many tragic stories I've heard locally of people being left stranded for an ambulance to arrive and paramedics being completely overstretched. All the while, this zombie government fails to act. Their failure to tackle the crisis in our ambulance service here is putting the patients' lives at risk. They need a plan."
Crisis in NHS dental care across the county. Gaping holes in dentistry care in Hampshire have been exposed by new research, prompting fresh calls for investment from people in need of urgent treatment. 9 in 10 NHS dental practices across the UK are not accepting new adult patients for treatment under the National Health Service, a BBC investigation found. In a third of the UK's more than 200 council areas, no dentists were found taking on adult NHS patients, and 8 in 10 NHS practices are not taking on children. Residents who've been unable to get appointments have expressed their anger online. Some say that getting a new NHS dentist, or waiting significant amounts of time to see a dentist, up to 2 years in some cases, is causing distress. The few practices that are taking patients on, such as Eastleigh Dental Care, are advising long waits, up to August 2023 for their first appointment. A woman living in Brighton Hill, Basingstoke, said she had been on waiting for 2 months to get an appointment for her wisdom tooth to be looked at. After ringing every available dentist from Basingstoke, Tadley and Alton with no luck, she ran 111, who put her in touch with Gillies of Basingstoke. Despite this, she was then informed that the practice had not been taking on NHS patients since the start of the pandemic. Now she's trying to get an appointment in Aldershot. She said, "I cannot be the only person who is experiencing this. The hospital can't help. They don't have any dental people there. I have literally tried everything in the last couple of months to get an appointment. And even with an infection in wisdom teeth, no one can help. This is disgusting." Foreign dentists are no longer coming to the UK to work, as it can take years to complete all the exams to register to work here. Most of the UK's NHS dentists are independent businesses and not employed by the NHS directly, while there was also a 10% drop in dentists doing NHS work here last year alone. The lack of appointments across the whole country has led people to drive hundreds of miles for treatment, pull out their own teeth without anaesthesia, and resort in some cases to making their own improvised dentures. Website dentistsinuk.co.uk showed that the only locations to have any available dentists this month were Whitchurch, where there are two practices available, and one each in Winchester and Fleet. This left other areas in Hampshire, such as Aldershot, Andover, Fareham, Romsey and Ringwood, with no practices taking on new patients. Dental problems in Portsmouth and Gosport, which are in the top 10 worst in the country, have had an impact on both GPs and school attendance. Portsmouth North MP Penny Morden said constituents with dental problems had sought help from GPs, and that was affecting school attendances. She said, dentists are saying they're only funded to operate at 65% of capacity, so there's no incentive for them to do better. Phil Gowers, chairman of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Local Dental Committee, said, Hampshire traditionally is a bit lower than other areas in the country in regards to funding, and Portsmouth is on the lower end of Hampshire. He said morale was really very low, with 47% of dental teams looking for alternative careers. NHS England said it had been commissioning services across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight as a priority. The NHS says teams are working to understand why previously interested parties did not come forward, and once those responses have been evaluated, they will look at alternative, flexible arrangements. The Department of Health said it is making an extra £50 million available to help bust the COVID backlog. BBC News contacted nearly 7,000 NHS practices, believed to be almost all of those offering general treatment to the public. The British Dental Association, the BDA, call it the most comprehensive and granular assessment of patient access in the history of the service.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So the announcements of deaths this week. Arnold. Monica Vera Arnold died peacefully on the 18th of August. Hunt. Hazel Hunt, née Shepherd, died peacefully on the 20th of August, aged 87. Lake. Leslie Lake died on the 17th of August, aged 86. Surgenor. Gillian Surgenor died in Winchester Hospice on the 28th of August, aged 86. Weeble. Iris Weeble, known as Dee, died on the 9th of August, aged 87. And Wilson. Michael Leslie Wilson died peacefully at home on the 16th of August, aged 90. May we have Christian comment, please, Andrew?
And this week's Christian comment was written by Liz Tatton, and it's entitled Time to Pay Attention. We took some family members for a walk around our neighbourhood recently and joined in with the laughter of one of the small children who saw the trains passing by. They were very close by, but we were used to them and didn't really notice them anymore. They were new to him and a source of great joy. During lockdown, we became used to the absence of planes landing at the airport, the traffic outside, the nighttime revellers returning home from town in the early hours, and all those other sounds which left our streets and airwaves for months. Now we notice them again. Not always welcome sounds. On Saturday, we were in London, and I didn't really notice a young woman with a stick as I squeezed past the crowds to get onto the underground train. I should have paid more attention, though, because no one else noticed her either. And she stood up by the door and was quietly crying. I offered her my lean-to seat, but assumed she was too offended and upset by then, as she declined. I felt ashamed. This morning, I read that people in Pakistan who are being flooded and needing rescue were sending notes asking for help. That drew my attention from an otherwise distressing news story, and it made me smile, and I have taken action to help. I smiled because the actions of the villagers, sending a note to the news team, was bold and different. It has attracted attention, and others too may help. They show human ingenuity even in the time of great trial. It has made me consider the gospel narratives of Jesus, who noticed people when others didn't. Zacchaeus, who was short and so climbed a tree for a better view as Jesus went past. Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today, he called up to the surprised man. In another event, a blind man called Bartimaeus is calling the name of Jesus through the noise of the crowds. People told him to be quiet. But Jesus stops and asks Bartimaeus what he wants. Isn't it obvious? He wants to be cured of his blindness. But Jesus shows respect to the individuals he meets and asks them what they want or invites himself to their homes. Jesus noticed everyone, even the woman with the hemorrhage who touched the hem of his cloak in a crowded place. She was desperate, but he felt the power go out of him as she was healed by her faith and his presence. I and we must be more attentive, especially in these times of hardship. People in our neighbourhood will suffer this winter, and we, in my family, are well enough off to survive these difficult times, but we have decided to be aware, mindful, and generous to others through our giving and sharing. But first, we must notice them. Slow down, look, and ask them what they need.
Thank you, Andrew. And now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, who's going to start us off.
I can see why this was published. From Peter Rees, Monarch Way, headed Congratulations in recognising the incredible achievement of all those past and present associated with the Hampshire Chronicle. I want to congratulate everyone for such a remarkable accomplishment. I was born and brought up in South London. My daily reading always included the early delivered newspaper, starting post-war with the Daily Herald, and moving on to the Daily Express, Daily Telegraph, Sunday Express and Observer. Dad used to bring the evening news or the evening standard home, which reflected what had happened during the day, or not. Two daily paper reading doses, obviously as well as books and weekly visits to the public library in Lower Sydenham, were my important early reading experiences. Newspapers were a very important feature of my reading life for news, information, opinion and generally always a pleasure. Television had started, but it was the coronation that my parents bought a black and white television with a tiny 9-inch screen to watch the event and many others over time. TV news was in its infancy. Of course, newspapers were only ever available because of the development of the printing press. Johannes Gutenberg invented the first large-scale European press in 1450. It was one of the most important technological, significant inventions of our age. Our local news and events are still being conveyed by this newspaper. Use of the word chronicle is still relevant. Written account, history, annal, archive, log, journal, record, document, write, register and report are all words that can be used in the same context. This combination of invention, science and literature has been maintained and developed globally over the 250 years of the Hampshire Chronicle. It competes admirably with other forms of news media, read widely for whatever reason. I write to thank everyone who has ensured its presence and survival in an essentially highly technological world. The joy of being read a newspaper, looking and learning from print is still a very worthwhile activity, and the Chronicle embodies... For the print is still a very worthwhile activity that the Chronicle embodies. Well done, and carry on. And that from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
James Anderson writes, nearly there. I took the opportunity of a holiday to establish how much of my electricity is used by essentials. Turns out that my fridges and freezer uses 30% of my total, unsurprisingly, as they are the only ones on 24/7 devices in the house. In Great Britain, our electricity consumption per person is about 70% of that of 15 years ago. Our total energy is similarly reduced. Quite what the WIN Act has in mind by urging us to use less is unclear. Chronicle Letters, August the 18th. One Mike asks, how much less? Perhaps the answer lies elsewhere. The main reason for the decline in our use of energy is the decline in the UK's economy. While our MP Steve Bryan's letter from Westminster says net zero is not about taking things away or wearing Beckett's hair shirt, it clearly is about Beckett's hair shirt and a shrinking economy. Industry has fled to friendlier climes from which we import. Despite the claims that renewables are nearly there, wind and solar produce just 4% of our total energy on any realistic assessment, which includes solutions to intermittency. Wind and solar must increase by about 40 times to meet net zero in 2050. Really? And that was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And our next letter is from Joss Crease, which is quite a thoughtful letter, and it's entitled The Blame Is Ours. I read Khaled Aziz's article, Chronicle, August 18, about the poor state of our water system, the appalling sewage dumping in our rivers and coastline, and the lack of incentive for water companies to fix all those leaks, whilst shareholders and directors continue to do, quote, very nicely, thank you, unquote. He points to the privatisation of our utilities in the past that created a system not fit for purpose in terms of serving the needs of ordinary citizens. Yet, be under no illusion, the decision to put a small number of shareholders and directors in control, and as key beneficiaries through privatisation, was taken by successive Conservative Party governments. Most of Hampshire is governed by Conservative politicians. We, and I mean that collectively, voted for them to privatise our utilities for short-term gain, to leave the EU, to avoid infrastructure investment that could have mitigated the energy crisis, and to undermine the majority of our public services through cuts. The choice is ours about what we do in the future, but simply complaining about it will not fix the problems, and growing environmental pressures will only worsen. And that's from Joss Crease, Rareridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
I have a letter entitled Dismay at Ideas for King's Walk, and it's from Councillor Christine Hill at Twyford. It was with great dismay that I looked at the picture of the proposed King's Walk from Silver Hill, a building which is supposed to be breathing life into the new shopping arcade, which was pictured on page 2 of the August the 4th edition of the Chronicle. It's a totally unsuitable design. The plans for the new development are supposed to be attracting more creative, independent businesses to the centre of Winchester. There's no character or appeal in the facade that is of any interest to businesses or the public in the proposed revamp of King's Walk. It looks like an old supermarket, a prison, or a car park in design. When you compare the care and restoration that is taking place on the building of the Brasserie Blanc in Jury Street, here is a building that promotes interest and projects the history of Winchester. I despair of the future of the city of Winchester if all the planners can come up with for a new and exciting part of Winchester is a building that looks like the outside of a multi-storey car park. The Silver Hill building should reflect the historical and beautiful buildings that are part of the city of Winchester. The King's Walk and Silver Hill shops were originally full of character. I do not think this bland car park type of building does anything for promoting a cultural quarter in the city of Winchester. It does nothing to invite interest or inspire. It's designed to be a failure before it's built. While internally this building may cater for spaces for start-up businesses, it in no way gives any indication of this externally. Previously there were archways, curved windows and pleasing areas that twisted and turned and were not all regimented in straight lines. And that's from Councillor Christine Hill, Twyford, Winchester. And there is a picture of the computer-generated image of the proposed development of King's Walk. And I have to agree, it looks very much like a multi-storey car park with nothing on the outside that that attracts you to go into the building.
And this from John and Wendy Hunt, headed Online Progress. Due to living in the city of Winchester, we and visiting friends require a parking permit. We are allowed one for our car and one for visitors. Because of COVID, for the past year or so, we have just bought scratch vouchers, which cost £13 for 10. The visitor permit is now £70. In very recent years, Winchester City Council refurbished the City Council offices, where we used to go to renew our permits. The window to renew permits was then in a different place. Recently, we used the last of our scratch cards when friends came for the day. We were unable to go to the council offices on Thursday as we had the funeral of a dear neighbour to attend. So Friday morning, we went to the Colebrook Street office with our proof of address to renew our permit, to be told we couldn't renew it there. It must now be done online or by post. We had no prior notification from the council that this was now the case. The young receptionist gave us the form to fill in. I phoned the address on the form to be told it could take several days before we received the new permit. I said my grandson may come to visit the following day and was asked what his car registration was. I said I was 77 and couldn't remember my own registration, let alone my grandson's. I was told he or another visitor must use a car park. Not very helpful. I filled in the form early Friday afternoon and my husband took it to the council offices and left it in their postbox. We are again being penalised in not doing things online. Still waiting for passports since June the 1st. John and Wendy Hunt, Water Lane, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Get On With It. The M3 is having work done on it to improve its drainage. During 4 daytime trips between Winnell and the M27 junction in the last week, I counted only 25, 5, 28 and 2 workers being present there. For this 9 miles of M3 that represents the most one person every 500 yards and an average of half a mile apart, surely that's a puny rate of working. It's only going to take them well over a year to complete this work and motorists meanwhile suffer delays. Why don't the highways authorities instead award the contract to a firm that will put more workers on the job and run more daily shifts and thus complete it much quicker? Even if this is slightly more expensive, the savings in delays to motorists is more than compensates for it. There were no workers north of Otterbourne, so what was the point in closing off such a long length of motorway when they were not hardly working on it? Why not work intensively on a shorter section and finish it before closing off another? Liz Truss was castigated by some of the recently comparing British work ethic and the Chinese one, but when I worked in Hong Kong, it was evident that they can do their can-do attitude and work ethic got things done much faster than we do in the UK. They also do not mire themselves in endless futile planning controversies that delay projects for years, as per Silver Hill and the station approach design. It once and get on with it and build it. And that's from Edward Chase, Hinton Fields, Kingsworthy.
Well said. As one who suffers on that part of the, or is suffering on that part of the M3. Ukraine's Day, and this is written by Ron Humsby, or Humby, and he is the leader, which makes sense. He's the leader of the Hampshire County Council, and this is his note on Ukraine's Day. With more than 1,000 Ukrainian families currently residing in Hampshire, the County Council wishes to add its voice to the many around the world paying tribute to this fantastic nation. Ukrainian Independence Day celebrates freedom and democracy, but sadly, in 2022, Ukraine finds itself fighting aggression once again. For our part, we will continue to do all we can to support the many families now here and those who still arrive, offering shelter and safety wherever it is needed. and I would like to pay tribute to our many partners and the people of Hampshire for the help and kindness offered over the past months, as well as the work of the County Council staff to ensure Ukrainian families can settle safely and swiftly into life here in Hampshire. None of us knows how long the conflict will endure, but while we wait, the courage of the people of Ukraine continues to inspire us all. And that's from Ron Humby, leader of the Hampshire County Council at the Castle Winchester. I would love to see any comments back on his letter in the following week.
Editorial comment. The pressure of examinations. The seemingly endless waiting is over. The exams were sat in May and June, and since then, thousands of Winchester teenagers have waited for the results of their A-levels and GCSEs. For the first time in 3 years, they were unaffected by COVID restrictions. The Chronicle congratulates every pupil and student for their hard work. Schools and colleges have changed over the years. Back in the 60s and 70s, the atmosphere surrounding them were more relaxed. If any exams were failed, you could take them again and again, if need be. Compare that to today and the pressure that is applied to students who are fundamentally still children. The stress that surrounds these exams seems to grow heavier every year, not least because the number getting top grades remorselessly rises. Whether because the marking is easier for students or students are working harder and smarter is open for debate. As a society, we have to lift the pressure on our youngsters. The world and the definition of success should not revolve around examination results.
Thank you. Now we have a Chronicle comment, please. Sorry, a first person, please, Norma.
Suppressing the Press by Kimberly Barber. During the pandemic, among those who continued to turn up for work every day were journalists. Reporters, such as those who work at the Hampshire Chronicle, were given key worker status. It was deemed important that the flow of information continued, even when the rest of the country was locked down. People needed to know what was happening, and this is one of the factors that drives journalists to continue in their roles. However, last week something happened that undermined the principle of journalism. On Sunday night, thousands of copies of the News, Portsmouth Daily paper, were prevented from leaving its print plant in Essex. That meant that on Monday the shelves at newsagents and supermarkets across the city were bare. Yes, the digital edition came out as planned, and its team worked continuously on its website and social media, but no paper editions made it to the city or even the county. Being the editor of four local newspapers, I often speak to people who rely on the printed copy of their local paper. While the News is not owned by the same company as my titles, I have a great affiliation with it, having cut my teeth there and worked my way up to business editor. The reason the newspapers were held up was due to an environmental protest that was happening nearby. Police closed the road for safety reasons. However, they were able to let petrol tankers and grocery lorries through, just not the trucks carrying the newspapers. A strategic group consisting of police and Thurrock Council representatives deemed News was a non-essential service, so the truck was not seen as priority traffic. However, the continued flow of information is vital to people's lives. That particular edition may have led on the music festival Victorious, but it also carried stories on water companies discharging raw sewage into rivers and seas, and independent businesses closing under the cost of living crisis pressures, coverage of postal strike, court reports, football match reports, and many stories of people doing good in the community. No one can deny that the newspaper would not have been held up if they were still printed in Hilsey, and many online commentators took absolute delight in crowing, "It would never have happened if," in mean-spirited, badly worded, ungrammatical Facebook posts. But that decision was taken a long time ago, and it's entirely unrelated to the problem presented here: the restriction and the suppression of the press. The Hampshire Chronicle has been in continuous publication since 1772. Its regularity over the past 250 years is one of its guiding principles. We are here day in and day out and stand with our city and its people. In fact, thankfully, only one edition has ever not made it to the shops during the 1926 general strike. We have made it through wars, recession, upheavals and dramas, and we proudly shine a light on Winchester. The News has also been continuous publication since 1877. I have personally held and read one of the first ever editions. It's a huge part of Portsmouth. In a comment piece, its editor, Mark Waldron, said, "The News is not just here in times of emergency. Since 1877, we have been informing our readers across our patch of what is happening, giving them the information they need, keeping them entertained, and ensuring we play a part in bringing communities together. I need a full explanation into why the police and the council officials stopped us from doing that." The newspaper released an online version for free, and by Tuesday, Monday's newspapers had also reached the shops. God bless the poor lorry driver. But ultimately, it is a worrying state of affairs when the freedom of the press is threatened. Questions need answering and assurances need to be given that this will not happen again at the News or any other local newspaper.
On to Belgarum, Andrew.
And this is an alternative look at the News, and this one's titled City Eatery Recruiting a Chef in Canada. A Winchester restaurateur has gone to extreme lengths to source his new head chef. Miff Kayum, who owns Kyoto Kitchen in Parchment Street, has flown more than 7 hours and 3,500 miles to Toronto, Canada, to interview a new candidate. The prominent businessman has ranked his potential new star man among the top 5% of Japanese chefs in the world and said he is willing to go to, quote, amazing extreme lengths to provide the city residents with the finest cuisine. Explaining his intercontinental mission in a video posted on Facebook, Mr. Kayon said the situation with COVID and Brexit has led to a lack of high-caliber chefs in the UK, forcing him to cast his net further afield. As you can see, I'm not at Kyoto Kitchen. I'm in the airport, waiting to board my flight to Toronto, he said. The reason I'm going to Toronto is because I'm going to interview a chef. One of the side effects of 2 years of lockdown and post-Brexit scenario is that there is a real lack of high-caliber or specialist cuisine chefs. Many people in the restaurant sector have been struggling with recruitment following these last two difficult years. So I'm going to Toronto to interview a guy we have dubbed the Iron Chef. He is a super talent, probably in the top 5% of Japanese chefs in the whole world, with a phenomenal background in kaiseki cuisine. Kyoto Kitchen opened in 2012 and specializes in sushi and sashimi dishes, including its Winchester roll, the world's first sushi roll to use wasabi leaf instead of seaweed.
Thank you. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 2nd of September at 6:19 a.m. and begins at 7:50 p.m. And next Wednesday the 7th of September it ends at 6:27 a.m. and begins at 7:39 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229, and this number is also on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And can I just remind listeners that the Colebrook Club, specifically for people with sight impairment, and it meets monthly on the first Monday of the month, except for May and January, between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They meet in St Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street, Winchester. And for more information, you can contact Samantha Frolick on 07714-004-803. That's Samantha Frolic, and her telephone number is 07714-004-803. And now we continue with items of general news.
And this one headed revamp for iconic pub. A popular Winchester pub has reopened its doors after undergoing its first refurbishment in 9 years. Pub chain Fuller's spent a significant amount of money on the refurb of the Wickham Arms to refresh the interior. It comes after the hotel rooms above the pub had a retouch 5 years ago, along with the Coach House restaurant and V&A rooms. Pub manager Carl Alexander said, "We stripped the floors and gave the bar a new carpet, which took away over 50 years of pub muck. It was the first time it had been touched in around 40 years. It feels a lot lighter and brighter, and it functions the same as the same pub. The floors has been stripped, sanded and varnished. We've laid a new carpet, given the pub a new lick of paint and a colour scheme. We have new ceilings and the bar was reconstructed from the inside. Tables and chairs have also been renovated to be more fit for purpose, and the tables have a new top. It's all just a lot nicer. All artefacts such as walking sticks, pictures and cups were photographed and catalogued before being put back in their original place. And there's a picture of the pub, which is actually a really nice pub at the bottom of Cannon Street, if you know where that is."
Hopefully this will make your mouths water. Hampshire firm links up over new ice cream flavour. A Basingstoke mint farm has teamed up with Winchester Ice Cream Company to create a special vegan flavour. Summerdown, which is in Oakley, has teamed up with Jude's Ice Cream, which is made in Twyford, to create the mint chocolate flavour as part of Jude's 20th anniversary celebrations. This rich and creamy yet delicately flavoured mint ice cream is rippled with a velvety chocolate swirl and rich dark chocolate pieces. The flavour has been made using English Black Mitcham peppermint, which has been grown, harvested and distilled on Summerdown's family farm for 3 decades. Head of sales and marketing at Summerdown, Joe Coleman, said, "We are over the moon to share this fantastic mint chocolate ice cream, which recognises a long friendship between two like-minded Hampshire brands. We are both certified as B Corporation and are equally passionate about sustainability and delicious food. Collaborating to produce a product which is celebrated the unique craftsmanship of both brands was a natural step." The two farms are just over 20 miles apart, and the new flavour is plant-based as part of Jude's commitment to make half of its range vegan by 2025. Jude's MD, and one of Jude's sons, Chow Mesner, said, "It was an absolute joy to have the expertise of the peppermint people at Summerdown as we recreated this wonderful balanced mint chocolate ice cream." And there's a picture of Joe Coleman in his field of, I presume, peppermint.
And this article is about a place that not only do we enjoy taking grandchildren to, but it's one of my favourite places to visit as well. And it is the Twyford Waterworks. And the Waterworks Open Day, and I'm getting strange looks from across the table at the moment, but it really is fabulous place to go to. I strongly recommend it. Ignore the laughter around the table. It's a wonderful place to visit. An array of steam engines, interesting mechanics, and a bountiful nature area will be on display at a historic attraction. Twyford Waterworks opens to the public on Sunday, September the 4th. And the spokesman said, "Discover how the drinking water that's piped to all our homes has been pumped from deep within the Hampshire Downs for over 120 years. Watch the machinery once used to do this in action and learn about its history. As much of the site will be open and in operation as possible. Come and enjoy the sights, the sounds and the smells of a working Edwardian waterworks. Visitors will be able to see," and here's a list of the things you'll be able to see: fellow readers. Majestic Hawthorne Davy steam pumping engine at work, utilising steam from the Babcock and Wilcox boiler. There'll be a large Ruston diesel pumping engines with one running at various times during the day. There'll be an 1895 Crossley gas engine and other smaller pumps in operation. There's also quite a sweet nature trail with Pond and Hyde, and of course the Industrial Railway. And for those that of you are not yet convinced, there will be the tea room, which will be serving a variety of light refreshments alongside a barbecue. For further information, visit twyfordwaterworks.co.uk. An excellent trip.
Can't wait. More about water. Public feedback on water plans. Communities have been giving their views on plans for new sustainable water sources to protect Hampshire's rare chalk streams and maintain supplies for customers. Over the past 6 weeks, Southern Water has consulted on its Hampshire Water Transfer and Water Recycling Project. The company is developing new sources of water so less is taken from the River Test and the River Itchen during a drought. The consultation came at a time when water resources are under the spotlight. On August the 5th, Southern Water became the first water company to impose drought restrictions on water use, known as temporary use ban. The restrictions for Southern Water's water supply customers in Hampshire came after 8 months of extremely low rainfall during one of the driest years since records began 131 years ago. Temporary use bans help protect wildlife during drought by minimising the amount of water taken from the environment for public supply. Southern Water says it has already significantly reduced the amount of water it takes from the Test and the Itchen and is progressing plans for new sources of water to protect them during a drought and reduce the risk of drought restrictions for customers in the future. However, it faced criticism from anglers after company bosses submitted a drought permit application to the Environment Agency to continue abstracting water even if the river fell below an agreed minimum level, previously set for the protection of the Test salmon population. The company also come under pressure for the amount of water lost through leaks, with approximately 88 million litres escaping through the faulty system per day. Liberal Democrat MP candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Danny Chambers, said, "Southern Water paying its executives huge bonuses when they are so clearly failing the public is a scandal. The firm has failed to invest in fixing the leaks, but found over £718,000 to pay their hierarchy, an increase on last year's exec payout. When it's too dry, Southern Water forces a hosepipe ban. When it's too wet, they spill sewage into our chalk streams and rivers. They should stop paying failing execs and their bonuses and start actually investing in our infrastructure. Southern Water customers deserve better." Southern Water has said reductions in the amount of water it can take from the Test and Itchen leave the company with a significant shortfall in a drought. And there is a photograph of, I presume, an angler holding a truly enormous salmon. I can't believe they get such big ones up in the Test.
Call for volunteers. A charity is recruiting more volunteers to undergo training and join its team that help people deal with the death of a loved one. Winchester Bereavement Support, WBS, is looking ahead to its next training course and recruiting more bereavement visitors to take part to meet demand. WBS has been supporting bereaved people for over 40 years with free face-to-face visits, emails and phone calls to the client's preference, as well as DBS checks and having a supervisor. All bereavement visitors undergo comprehensive training to best support its clients. Courses are run approximately every 2 years, with the next one taking place on Monday evenings from October to January 2023 in central Winchester. The course has been designed by experienced trainers who have been volunteering with the charity for a long time. Many of the current bereavement visitors have dealt with traumatic losses themselves and use their experience to relate to others. The voluntary organisation is now looking for people who are empathetic and have good listening skills and a few hours to spare each month. One client said, "I'm not sure it would be quite possible to adequately put into words just how much the bereavement visitor helped me in talking through the grieving process. They helped me build a resilience I didn't think possible." The next course will start on Monday, October the 10th at 7:15 to 9:30 p.m. For more information, contact the WBS secretary at secretary@WinchesterBereavementSupport.org.uk or call 01962 620010. That's 01962 620010.
And this is the advance notice of another upcoming event, and this one's called Ride and Stride for Churches. Participants are invited to visit as many Hampshire churches as they can by foot, bicycle, scooter, horseback, canoe, bus, or car. On Saturday, September the 10th, the sponsored Ride and Stride event will be returning to Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, with people travelling from church to church throughout the day, raising money to fund the upkeep of local churches. The event, hosted by Hampshire and the Islands Historic Churches Trust, the HIHCT, as supported by Hampshire County Council, raised nearly £62,000 last year, with more than 100 churches sharing the sponsorship money. All proceeds go towards restorations and repairs of local churches and chapels. People can either take part as a participant or a church representative. Individuals that are riding and striding can choose their own route and method of travel, whether it's by bike, foot, horse, car, or wheelchair, to visit as many churches as they want between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. More than 400 churches across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight have registered for the event, with more expected to sign up before the event commences. Some churches are celebrating the day with refreshments for Ride and Stride visitors, such as St. Luke's in Stanmore, Winchester, and All Saints in Brasefield, Romsey. For the full list of participating churches, go to hihct.org.uk/participating-churches/ (period). Churches can also take part by putting up a welcome sign if it's unable to open on the day, or by encouraging ride and striders to take part.
Dying and dangerous trees cut down. Two diseased trees have been cut down by contractors after their condition sparked safety fears. Tree surgeons chopped down the trees in St. George's Street next to Casson Block on Sunday evening. The chosen time after 6 p.m. meant traffic congestion on the major road was reduced to a minimum. Last week, the Chronicle reported online how disease had taken hold of one of the trees so badly that it was shedding its bark. The action was taken by Hampshire County Council, as the trees are on highways land. As well as the worst diseased tree, the workmen also removed a second tree. Looking at the rings, both were about 40 to 50 years old. And I'm glad they did it on a Sunday night, because the lorries that are taking away the massive tree are huge.
A sharp rise in mental struggles for children. Almost 20,000 children and young people have been in contact with mental health services in Hampshire, Southampton and the Isle of Wight over the last year, new figures show. Children's mental health charity Young Minds said the figures are harrowing, especially as students receive grades for A-level and GCSE exams. The charity said increasing pressures at school and the impact of lockdowns during the coronavirus pandemic has affected the young people's mental health, leading to a huge number needing support. NHS digital figures show 18,845 children and young people had at least one contact with mental health services in the NHS Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight CCG area in the last 12 months to May. This was up from 18,000 380 in April, and the most since local figures were recorded in July 2021. Across England, the number of children who had at least one contact with mental health services in the last year rose by 21% from 570,000 in the year to March 21, when national records began, to 690,000 in the year to May. Young Minds said that figures paint a shocking picture of the mental health of young people. It put the rise in children down to numbers of factors, including pandemic and school pressures. Ollie Parker, head of external affairs, said, "The pandemic has certainly deepened the crisis in young people's mental health, with huge disruption to students' education, many of whom were also dealing with multiple pressures like difficult home environments and bereavement and other trauma." Mr. Parker also said schools do not have the resources to support their students, who have felt particularly worried about exams since returning to school following the pandemic. The Department of Health and Social Care said supporting children's mental health is a major priority, and that it invested $79 million in 21-22 to expand the service to support more than 22,000 children and young people. A spokesman added, "It's expanding mental health support teams to cover 3 million pupils by 2024 and increasing investment in services by at least $2.3 billion a year by 2024. Meanwhile, the figures also show the number of children and young people across England who are still in touch with mental health services by the end of May topped 400,000 for the first time. Around 11,595 were in Hampshire, Southampton, and Isle of Wight, up from 11,075 in the same month last year. The number of children still waiting for contact with mental health services nationally also reached a new high in May, when there were 460,000 open referrals."
I feel I've become an announcer for What's On in Hampshire next week, but here's another one. Festival of Food returns. A popular culinary celebration is set to return to a historic silk mill. Whitchurch Silk Mill has announced it's bringing back its much-loved food festival for 2022. After a hugely successful inaugural event last year, the gathering is again set to take place in the grounds of the Industrial Heritage Site on the banks of the River Test. On Saturday, September the 10th, revellers will be able to attend for free as part of a packed schedule of events for the Heritage Open Days, England's largest celebration of history and culture. Organisers say they are determined to spoil visitors with a selection of delicious delights and tasty treats, nice bit of alliteration there, from local culinary suppliers. The first event, which organisers hoped would become a permanent fixture, proved so popular it's been brought back for another year. A selection of food and drink stalls, weaving demonstrations, children's craft activities, face painting from Ashley Archer, cooking demonstrations, and children's workshops from the Natural Cook Company, plus much more, will be on offer as part of the celebrations. It will also showcase a wide range of stalls packed full of food and drink from local suppliers, including the Homemade Brownie Company, Hot Oven, Thai Bites, Crepe Britain, Three Parts, Horny Chili Sauces, and many more. Jess Bone, who's the operations manager of Whitchurch Silk Mill, said, "We want to create an exciting day out that gives visitors of all ages a mini-festival vibe. A lot of hard work has gone into ensuring a delightful and safe experience that combines culinary and industrial heritage exploration. We'd love to see as many people as possible sourcing their food locally, and we hope this will allow them to meet new makers, bakers, and suppliers." The Silk Mill Food Festival takes place on Sunday, September the 10th, from 10:30 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Admission is free and includes entrance to the mill. And Whitchurch Silk Mill is one of the last working silk mills making silk gowns for the legal industry and is now a working museum.
Cost of living, winter woes or climate opportunity? There is no doubt that this winter is going to be a tough time for many of us. The figures this week have been eye-watering. An 85% increase in the cost of energy is a staggering figure. It is no wonder that the think tanks are suggesting nearly 30% of adults are expecting to keep the heating off this winter. But are there opportunities to be had? The first thing to say is that the cost of living crisis is immediate, in your face, and profoundly damaging to homes and businesses. But it is small in comparison to the impacts of the climate crisis. This week we learned that nearly 500,000 people had lost their homes in Pakistan to record-breaking floods. One third of the country is underwater. That's an area the size of the UK. Over 35 million people are currently impacted or displaced. That's equivalent to half the UK's population. And the Pakistan floods are one of approximately 40 climate-related major disasters currently underway, almost all attributed to climate change. So as we look at our Hampshire energy bills and struggle to work out how to make savings, it is good to see the bigger picture too and realise we are very definitely not alone in finding the winter ahead may well be an era-defining. So what can we do? We hear trite comments from some politicians suggesting the solutions are found in wearing thicker jumpers and turning the heating down or off altogether. But it is possible to get far more creative and create a long-term movement of people that use a lot less energy. The less we use, the more resilient we become in the face of the twin challenges of climate and cost of living. In the home, the key is first to reduce gas use. If you have a gas hob, it is actually much cheaper to fill a saucepan with hot water from the tap and then boil it on the gas ring, reducing heating by half time by half, also directly cuts the cost of gas usage. If you have access to a slow cooker, the costs of running one can be considerably lower than blitzing food in the microwave or cooking in a gas oven. When you boil a kettle, just put in the amount of water you need and no more. Reducing the amount of water used will significantly reduce the electricity cost. Last winter, we bought thermal blackout curtains and they are incredibly effective at heat retention. Many double-glazed homes are still quite leaky, so sealing the leak with thermal curtains and blinds can be an inexpensive alternative to new windows and doors. Think also about how you use your home. There are obvious savings in terms of no lights or heat in rooms that are not being used. But for those areas that are in constant use, making sure you are using LED bulbs, sealed chimney flues with insulation material if it's not in use, and if you have a gas fire or gas boiler, replace its use as much as possible with low-energy portable electric heater. A thermostatically controlled portable electric heater is one of the most effective and least expensive heating methods. Make sure your hot water storage is really well insulated. That will mean you only need to have the hot water on for 2 hours in the morning and two in the evening, far cheaper to replace the cladding than to get a new cylinder.
Trolley service returns to City Hospital. After 2 years hiatus, Royal Voluntary Service is relaunching its iconic hospital trolley service at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The charity is issuing a call for more people to sign up to get behind the wheels and volunteer in hospitals, with backing from the ambassador Elaine Page. On her own trolley shift, accompanied by the Royal Voluntary Service President, Her Royal Highness the Duchess of Cornwall, Elaine delighted patients with a bedside rendition of her cat's hit Memory. The welcome rumble of a Royal Voluntary Service trolley will once again be heard in the hallways of the RHCH after pandemic restrictions paused the service in 2020. However, the charity needs to recruit many new retail volunteers at a speed in order to continue to support patients, staff and visitors in Winchester. Volunteers are needed not only for the trolley service, but also to support the Royal Voluntary Service shop in the Butterfield Wing. At the shop, as well as serving customers, volunteers ensure that they are always greeted by a friendly face who's there to listen and chat in what could be a difficult or uncertain time. And there is a picture of a very well-laden trolley with Elaine Page with her her beautiful smile and with the RVS volunteer looking very happy.
Heartbroken by festival mess. The co-owner of a popular Winchester music festival has said he is heartbroken by the amount of rubbish left by revellers. Boomtown Fair returned to the Mattley Estate earlier this month after a three-year absence. It welcomed 66,000 people from August the 10th to the 14th for an extended weekend of partying, which saw more than 500 artists, including Shy FX, Gentlemen's Dub Club, and Cool and the Gang, take to the stage in the blistering heat. Speaking in a video posted to his Facebook page, Lack Mitchell, who founded the festival alongside Chris Rutherford, said, "From an audience perspective, and from a show perspective, it was absolutely phenomenal. It was hands down the best yet. The layout, the design, and the energy was just incredible." He added, "We are so proud of what we've achieved here, but the challenges behind the scenes were immense. There are still people here sweating and giving it everything to pack up, and it's going to be another 10 days before we're done." Mr. Mitchell praised the determination of his crew for overcoming relentless issues such as staff shortages, machinery breaking down in the heat, and last-minute cancellations from suppliers. However, he admitted that they didn't manage to deter visitors from ditching their rubbish at the beauty spot. "We didn't crack the campsite waste, and that was devastating," he said. Organisers have introduced several initiatives over recent years in hope of encouraging partygoers to clean up after themselves. For the first time this year, crews of eco-warriors toured the festival every afternoon with a mobile pop-up sound system, encouraging people to help the big Boomtown tidy up. The warriors handed out free 2023 festival tickets and merchandise to the cleanest camps, and those doing their best to keep the South Downs National Park free from litter. He added, "We've had all these amazing messages coming in from people who left their whole area spotless. They really did leave no trace, and it was great to see the responsibility some people have taken. But there were other groups which left real messes and just didn't care. It was heartbreaking, and we really need to look at that. The whole sustainability side of the festival is so far away from where we wanted to be. We're not even touching the sides with what we can do with it." And Mr. Mitchell said he now hopes the involvement of new shareholders in the festival can help it achieve its goal of being net zero by 2025.
I'm going to read this because Andrew didn't want to read it because he doesn't like snakes. Good luck. Petition launched to ban snakes as pets. A man has launched a petition to ban keeping exotic animals as pets after a python made a great escape. John Williams is scared for the safety of his family and friends after an 18-foot albino Burmese python slithered across the rooftops in Ribble Close in Chandler's Ford last Tuesday. The slippery serpent also tried to enter the upstairs window of a terraced house. The escape has prompted the 30-year-old cruise port worker to take matters into his own hands. John said, "My friends live in Chandler's Ford and that is why I'm so concerned. I saw the article in the Daily Echo, the Chronicle's sister paper, and I feel scared for myself and my family and for other people, especially pets and children. I think it's a disgrace. Snakes that big should be kept under constant control. I've always thought this." The escape made headlines in the UK, with thousands of people, including TV personality Rylan, sharing their shock at the news. But it was Ribble Close residents who awoke to the slithering surprise. Jenny Warwick, 62, witnessed the python scaling the house opposite hers after 5 a.m. last Tuesday. She said, "I had no idea anyone owned a snake here. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I would agree that there should be some rules on keeping animals like that, and they should be checked on. I don't think a snake of that size is an ideal pet to have in for the houses that we live in. They should be in their natural habitat or somewhere they can be looked after properly and not as pets, especially when they're that size. John's petition can be signed at www.change.org. I don't think you really want to know all that. I just want to tell you about the photograph of him holding up his mobile with a picture of the snake, and I have to say it is absolutely enormous, dripping off the roof in through somebody's window. For you, Andrew.
Can I just add that I'm pleased to see that alliteration is alive and well in the studio today. And
like
it's
that.
A lovely slippery serpent. And you had another one, I can't remember, but you had it in the
two S's.
A slithering something or other.
Slippery, they're having fun.
Somebody is.
Back to calmness. Housing developer boosts for crucial volunteers at sporting events. Winchester's Half Marathon Fun Run has received the support from UK House Builder to help fund the Marshall volunteer groups. Persimmon Homes has joined forces with Rees Leisure to support the Winchester Marathon, taking place on September the 25th. Rees Leisure launched the race in 2016, now offering participants two courses, a half marathon and a hilly 10K through Winchester streets and the countryside. Persimmon Homes will be donating £200 to the dozens of community groups and sports teams who have volunteered to marshal the race and assist runners. The voluntary groups include local university sports clubs, scouts group, girl guides, women's institutes and running clubs. Chris Rees, founder of Rees Leisure, said, "We couldn't put on this amazing race without the help of all the community groups and volunteers involved. I'm incredibly pleased that we have partners like Persimmon on board who are able to support those groups who help make this event happen. The event looks set to be a real highlight on Hampshire's sporting calendar." Ian Beale, Managing Director of Persimmon Homes South Coast, said, "The Winchester Marathon is every sense a community and family event, and we're delighted to support this brilliant spectacle through Winchester's iconic streets and stunning landscapes. The race, formerly known as the Winchester Half Marathon, includes landmarks such as St Catherine's Hill and the Winchester Cathedral. This year, the sixth edition and first to feature a hilly 10K. For more, go to winchesterhalf.co.uk. No, I don't think you need that. It doesn't look as though it's the full one anyway. The organiser, Rees Leisure, is a sports event management company managing some of the South's largest running events like the ABP Southampton Marathon. The company works with a range of community groups, sports teams and societies across its series of events. And there's a picture of a very, very useful group of Marshall volunteers pictured in the outer close.
And for those of you that are searching for another reason to visit your local pub, this is a story about the Bugle Inn, which is now offering electricity and a pint at a village pub. A village pub near Winchester has introduced electric vehicle charging to its customers. Zest, the electric vehicle charging infrastructure specialist, has enabled the Bugle Inn in Twyford to provide EV charging points. It means drivers visiting or living nearby can charge up at their leisure and give a much-needed boost to post-COVID trade. The Bugle's proprietor, Lenny Carr-Roberts, said, "Adding value at a time when the pub trade continues to recover from the pandemic is vital right now. It's been great to work with Zest to help meet the rising need for EV charging and show our commitment to an increasingly important green agenda." The charging unit will offer two charging points in designated parking spaces. The fast chargers run on 100% renewable energy and at speeds that match the typical length of stay. Charging sessions and payments can be quickly processed through the Zest app with access to full customer support. Zest Chief Executive Robin Heap said, we're delighted to join forces with the Bugle Inn to add a new place to charge in this part of Hampshire. We believe that by taking action today to improve access to public charging, we can democratise EV adoption and help create a sustainable, zero-carbon future for everybody. The Bugle Inn will also offer a free soft drink to anyone charging and regularly implements a highly popular designated driver scheme. Mr. Carr Roberts added, as a responsible landlord, discouraging people from drinking and driving is important to us, so we wanted to take this opportunity to raise awareness of the new EV charge points through that message. And the article is accompanied by a photograph showing the new Zest EV connection point, with inset into that picture, a very cheery and smiley Lenny Carr Roberts.
Art show to raise funds for CPRE charity. CPRE Hampshire, the countryside charity, is hosting an art exhibition at the end of September. Taking place in Winslade near Basingstoke, it will feature a range of high-quality, affordable artworks, including paintings, prints, pottery, sculpture, photography and more. All are welcome to visit to view, be inspired and to purchase. Entry to the event is free on Saturday, September the 24th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Sunday, September the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tea, coffee and other refreshments will be available. Free parking. A private view will take place on Friday, September the 23rd, from 6 till 9 p.m. with champagne and canapes. Tickets are available at Eventbrite for £25. The venue is Swallick Farmhouse, Winslade, RG25 2NG, set in beautiful part of the North Hampshire Downs, with lovely views and many walks.
Man to cycle 300 miles for the Royal British Legion. A Winchester man is set to pedal to Paris in memory of his late father. Following months of training, Paul Fish will join more than 200 other cyclists at Eltham Palace in London on Thursday, September the 1st, and will finish in the French capital on Monday, September the 5th. Mr. Fish is taking on the Royal British Legion cycling fundraiser to raise money for the Armed Forces charity. During the challenge, the 51-year-old will cycle almost 300 miles through London, Kent and northern France before finally reaching the finishing line, where a service of remembrance will be held at the Arc de Triomphe. Pedal to Paris is the only other cycling event next to the Tour de France for which the Champs-Élysées is closed off to traffic for the cyclists to cross onto the Arc de Triomphe. The event holds particular significance for Mr. Fish as he's taking on a mammoth ride in his dad's name. His father, David Fish, served in the RAF for approximately 40 years, from the 1960s to the nearly 2000s. He was part of the Signals and Communications Department, serving in Cyprus, Berlin and North of Africa. Mr. Fish said, "I'm taking on Pedal to Paris partly in my dad's name. He died at the beginning of COVID, so we didn't see a lot of him towards the end and none of us really got to say goodbye. He was so proud of his service, so this is for him. I think the Legion does a fantastic job and I'm really pleased to be doing something that spreads the word about the work of the RBL does beyond the poppy appeal." Mr. Fish is hoping to raise at least £5,000 for the RBL and the nation's biggest arms forces charity, which delivers through life support to serving personnel, veterans and their families. Simon O'Leary, director of the Poppy Appeal at the RBL, said, "We are very grateful for Paul to taking on the Pedal to Paris challenge. It really is an incredible experience and we wish him all the best for the ride. Apart from the training that goes into preparing for the event, the fundraising that he is undertaking on behalf of the RBL will help those we support live on to a more hopeful future. Pedal to Paris is the UK's longest-running charity bike ride between two capital cities. Since it was started in 1996, the event has raised more than $8 million for the RBL, helping support its vital work with the armed forces community. If you wish to sponsor Mr. Fish, visit Paul Fish Pedal, three separate words, all with capitals, to Paris Fundraising. And there's a picture of Paul and also a picture of his late father.
The council in the spotlight over child complaints. Dozens of complaints lodged against a county council have exposed flaws in the treatment of children with special educational needs and disabilities. The local government and social care ombudsman has published its annual list of upheld complaints from April 2021 to March 2022. Hampshire County Council had 35 complaints upheld by the Ombudsman, meaning they sided with the complainant in 83% of the cases. Not only was this higher than the 71% of similar local authorities, but the vast majority of upheld complaints related to these children. Complaints included delays to education, health and care plans, and issues with home-to-school transport, all leading to school being placed in unsuitable schools or missing out on their education. In one case, a parent pulled their child out of the education system to be homeschooled. Kirsty Somiley from the Disability Union said, "These figures are disappointing, but not surprising. It's something that affects so many families with SEND children and then impacts their education too. In general, the Southeast region had the highest proportion of children and education complaints in the country." Michael King from the LGO said, "The vast majority of councils agree to the recommendations we make and see them as common sense ways of providing better services for people in their area. However, this can only happen when councils act swiftly when they have committed to do so. Unfortunately, we are seeing some councils taking longer to make these changes, which puts them at risk of making the same mistakes again. In 18% of cases, we found compliance was late. While I recommend, or as well I welcome, the professional way in which the majority of councils continue to work with us, I would urge those authorities who are having problems to pay close attention to this final but crucial step in the complaints process." Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, who we heard from earlier this evening, said the number of upheld complaints is smaller than previous years and that the County Council welcomes constructive feedback. He said, "We always work hard to try and get things right first time for Hampshire's residents and take all complaints very seriously. Where we haven't been able to resolve things directly with the member of the public, we work closely with the Ombudsman to remedy these issues and make improvements to our services along the way." And this is accompanied by a large photograph which just has Hampshire County Council on the wall.
Power cut hit city. A fault in a substation was the cause of a widespread power cut in the Winchester area last Wednesday evening. A spokeswoman for SSE said the following day, "Yesterday at 5:39, there was a fault in the primary substation which took over 9,000 customers off supply as a protection measure. Engineers were immediately aware of the problem and worked to reconnect customers as swiftly and safely as possible. All customers were back on supply by 6:42 p.m. SSEN would like to apologise to any customers affected by this fault. The outage affected thousands of households in the SO21, SO22 and SO23 postcode areas.
Supermarket recruiting. A popular supermarket is on the lookout to expand their team, employing over 200 staff across some stores in Hampshire, including Winchester, Basingstoke and Southampton. Aldi has announced it is looking to hire 218 store colleagues. The UK's fifth largest supermarket is looking for people of all levels of experience to fill roles at its store across the region. Kelly Stokes, recruitment director at Aldi UK, said, "As we continue to grow and make Aldi accessible to even more shoppers, we need more amazing colleagues across the county to help us make it possible. As well as the healthcare and lifestyle perks, working at Aldi means great working environment and real opportunities to progress within the business. We look forward to welcoming even more great people in Hampshire to become part of our success. This includes both full-time and part-time positions such as stock assistant and store assistant, all the way up to store manager, with salaries up to £48,490. The recruitment push forms part of Aldi's nationwide expansion drive, with the supermarket on track to create 2,000 permanent new roles across the UK this year. Last month, Aldi announced a second pay increase this year for its store colleagues, maintaining its position as UK's best paying supermarket. From September, store colleagues at Aldi will earn an industry-leading minimum hourly rate of £10.50 nationally and £11.95 inside the M25, with paid breaks included.
Charities take horses into care. One horse has died and six others have been taken into care by animal charities after they were found neglected in horrendous conditions. The animals were living in a field near Winchester, but were reported to the RSPCA after local people raised their concerns. Louise Elton, who lives in Winchester, sounded the alarm after she became concerned about the welfare of the seven horses. Louise said, "It is devastating. There is no excuse for a horse to be in that condition." Three of the animals had previously been in the care of the Hampshire Spirit Rescue Centre, a charity that helps people struggling to look after their horses, with the charity rehoming the horses and placing them into the care of a family 6 months ago. The family passed initial checks and the charity's three-month inspection. However, the horse's welfare went downhill recently, with the charity taking three of the horses back into its care earlier this month. The intervention was too late for one horse named Marius, who has since died. Kaylee Parker, a trustee for the Hampshire Spirit Rescue Centre, said, "On Saturday, August the 20th, I went to do a regular home check, which we do at 3 and 6 months. The one at 3 months was fine, and the one on Saturday, I found them in horrendous conditions. We were concerned they had underlying health issues. We took them back on August the 21st, and on the next day we had the vet out, and it was confirmed none of them had health concerns, and their condition was just down to neglect and starvation." Ina Bauer, who owned Marius before handing him to the charity, has since started a petition online named "Get Justice for Marius." It has so far received over 700 signatures. She said, "Marius was a lovely horse, and I'm absolutely gobsmacked as to why they, the family, did not ask for help from the charity. It is horrific, and I am furious. I do not blame the charity, because they went above and beyond to try and save him." Several animal welfare charities, including the RSPCA, were contacted to help the remaining four horses, and the RSPCA has since confirmed the animals are now being looked after. A spokesman for the RSPCA added, "We are aware of this situation, and four horses are now in our care." They said they could not discuss specific details, as it could prejudice a future prosecution. And then they added, "We are so grateful to people who report suspected animal suffering to us, and we would like to reassure people we will always look into, and if necessary, investigate any complaints made to us about animal welfare." And this article is accompanied by three photographs, which are pretty horrendous. So it shows three different horses, and their rib cages are clearly showing through. It's pretty horrendous.
On a lighter note, Chronicle Anniversary starts with a free cupcake. To celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Hampshire Chronicle, readers were able to collect a free cupcake and a tote bag full of goodies with last week's newspaper. Linda Johnson collected her cupcake from W.H. Smith in High Street, which were freshly made by a community project in Bournemouth. There was also an opportunity to win £250 and jewellery worth £145 from Jeremy France Jewellers in Winchester. This week we're giving readers a chance to win a year's supply of chocolate from Chococo. A series of features looking at the history of the Hampshire Chronicle and written by esteemed historian Barry Sherlock is running every week until September the 22nd, when there will be an 8-page special supplement. Readers are also being invited to meet the team in a special open event, the Hampshire Chronicle office in Upper Brook Street on Thursday, September the 15th.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.